Okay, okay. Yeah, so I'm going to talk to you about some rarity observations we have of a certain flare type, where the majority of the X-ray emission comes from the corona. And specifically, we've been looking at how the spatial properties of these coronal X-ray loops change with time during the flare. And then using this in conjunction with the spectral parameters, look at the corresponding temporal changes in things like number density and thermal pressure in the region. So here's a really simple cartoon of types of X-ray emission we might expect from what we call a standard flare. So we generally expect some kind of X-ray emission from the corona. It's usually of a lower energy, usually predominantly thermal emission from heated plasma.
Maybe if you switch it over to the other side, because you tend to turn to face the screen.
All right. Can anyone hear me?
It's okay, but it's going to be better.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Hello? Okay. And where the majority of the non-thermal emission comes from, those electrons that reach the chromosphere. But in the last couple of years, with rarity observations, a number of people have been looking at another type of flare, where the majority of the X-ray emission comes from the corona itself, and where we see either no foot point emission, or only a relatively weak foot point emission. So there's already been a number of studies looking at how the spatial properties of these corona X-ray sources change with energy. So I'm just going to run through these briefly. Okay, so the first study was in around 2008 with these guys, and they looked at how the loop length of these sources changed with energy. And the loop length is defined as this direction measured parallel to the guiding field. And they found that the loop length increased approximately quadratically with energy. And they found that the model that best fitted this data was one where was basically a simple collisional transport model. So the electrons were behaving non-thermally. And also they found that the model of best fit was also one in which the loop itself contained an extended acceleration region. So this type of flare might allow us to actually look at the acceleration region itself. So there was another interesting study in 2011, and they looked at how the loop width changed with energy. And the loop width is defined as this direction measured perpendicular to the guiding field through the loop top. They found that this also increased with energy, but increased in more of a linear fashion. And these guys suggested that this type of behavior can only really be described by the presence of a non-parallel B component in the region. And so it could be a diagnostic for the presence of magnetic turbulence. So the two studies that I just showed and our study, we've looked at these spatial parameters using a method or an imaging algorithm known as visibility forward fitting. And so when RESI creates images, it creates what are known as X-ray visibilities. And these are basically the 2D Fourier components of the X-ray source. And the inverse transformation gives you the X-ray image. So what vis forward fit does is it takes a simple form that we can understand, like a circular or elliptical Gaussian. Or in the case of a loop, it takes a series of Gaussians, and it compares this with the real X-ray visibilities. So there's a lot of disadvantages to this method, but its main selling point is that it can give us the position and sizes of the source easily in the moments of the distribution. So we use this method. And we studied three M-class events that had already been studied by these guys. But now we concentrated on how the spatial parameters of these loops changed in time instead of energy. So these are our three events. But this is a very short presentation, so I'm just going to talk about this 23rd of August 2005 then. So here it is. It's a LIMR event, and it has a coronal emission in roughly the 10 to 25 keV range. Here's the light curve of our observation time. It spans part of the rise peak and a small part of the decay phase of X-ray emission, roughly a 20-minute period, and we imaged in either 2 or 4 minute intervals, depending on the number of counts at that point. Now this event does have at least one weak foot point, which you can see in the 30 to 40 keV range, and it emerges roughly here where this bump is in the 20 to 40 keV range. And originally we imaged in three energy bands of 10 to 12, 12 to 15, and 15 to 20 keV. Okay, so firstly, here's our imaging results. So we can see from this animation that the loop changes from a relatively long and thin loop to a much shorter and wider loop at later times. So if we now plot the loop length, the loop width, and also the radial distance, which is measured at the loop top, and for this event, it's basically the altitude as well at the limb, against the observation time, then we can see that all three of these parameters decrease for the peak in X-ray emission. The loop length falls quite dramatically, whereas the loop width, which is like the cross-sectional area of the loop, and the altitude, they fall at roughly the same rate, which is quite interesting. And then after the peak in X-ray emission, we see that loop length remains approximately constant, while the loop width and the radial distance then increase, again at roughly the same rate. So these changes in radial distance, these have been seen before for a number of flare events. But these changes in loop length and loop width were the first result of our observations. Okay. So also here are the spectroscopy results. So for each of our imaging intervals, we basically just fitted normal thermal and thick target Bremsstrahlung fits to the spectra. And from the thermal fit, we get two useful parameters, which are the emission measure and the plasma temperature. So the emission measure rises throughout observation time, while the plasma temperature follows the trends of many flares, and it peaks before our peak in X-ray emission, and then starts to steadily decrease. So now that we assume that we have reliable spatial parameters, we can combine them with our spectral parameters to look at other things. So firstly, we can combine the loop width and the loop length together to just find the overall changes in loop volume. So unsurprisingly, the loop volume falls before the peak in X-ray emission, and this is due to both the decreases in loop length and loop width. And then after the peak in X-ray emission, the loop volume increases. This is purely now due to the increasing loop width or cross-sectional area of the loop. The number density and the thermal pressure of the region, they increase for the peak in X-ray emission. And we'll see, importantly, for the next slide, they peak just after the peak in X-ray emission and then start to decrease. So once we had all these parameters together and we looked at them in some detail, it was clear that our flare seemed to move through three temporal phases during our observation time. And these are denoted firstly by this peak in plasma temperature, then by the peak in X-ray emission, and also where we see the smallest spatial parameters occurring. And then finally by these peaks in thermal pressure and number density at later stages. And this was the second main result of our observations. Okay, so just to summarize what we saw. So we see this contraction and then expansion of the loop volume before and after the peak in X-ray emission. And we also see these three temporal phases emerging, where we have the peak in plasma temperature, the peak in X-ray emission, and where the smaller spatial parameters occur. And finally, this peak in thermal pressure. Okay, so we only had three events for our study, but we do see the exact same results occurring for our other two coronal events. I think this April flare is possibly the most interesting one because it has multiple peaks in its light curve, and we see these results emerging at each peak, which we can see here. So here's peak one as the first batch of the three temporal phases, and then the next batch. And it's also plotted for our May event here. So what are the possible explanations for what we're seeing? Well, to be honest, we don't have any concrete conclusions. I think the changes in spatial parameters with time are much harder to explain than with energy. Possibly the hardest parameter to try and explain is the changing loop width or loop cross-section of the loop. Interestingly, we saw for our LIM event that the changes were approximately the same as those in our radial distance. So possibly it's due to the same process. Often when we see small decreases in radial distance for a peak in X-ray emission, some people try and explain this by simply a decrease in B pressure in the region due to some reconfiguration of the field. So maybe this is also causing the decrease in cross-section, but we're not sure. It's probably safe to assume that some sort of thermal conduction to lower layers, so chromospheric evaporation is what's probably causing the increasing number density and thermal pressure in the region. We saw the loop lengths decrease quite dramatically before the peak in X-ray emission. This is probably just due to the increase in number density, the electrons behaving non-thermally, and so an electron of a given energy will just, we won't move so far through the plasma as the number density increases. Maybe as the thermal pressure increases in the region, this finally balances whatever's causing this loop cross-sectional shrinkage and eventually overcomes this. And maybe this is what causes the increasing loop width at later times. But we're not sure. These are some speculative conclusions. So a lot more work is needed on this. Firstly, we need newer events with SDO data so we have a clearer picture of what's actually happening in the region. RESI data is great, but it's just really just an X-ray blob. All things like multiple loops interacting, etc. Secondly, we just need more events of this flare type, the statistics. Do all events of this flare type show the same trends? Secondly, what about other flare types? What about flare types that have strong coronal emission, but also strong foot point emission? Do the coronal sources for these events show the same trends, or do they behave completely differently? This would be quite a nice study, I think. And if anyone's interested, the full information can be found in this paper. Thank you.
Do we have any questions? Marcus.
This is more a comment, what Hugh Hudson calls the soft X-ray imperialism, in the sense that if you do temperature fits to RESI data, you fit only the high temperature tail.
Yeah.
Did you use an isothermal model? Just a single temperature?
Yes.
Okay, so if you do that, then you get in the average a factor two higher temperature than the peak of the DM when you use AIA data. Mm-hmm. So it's, if you want to get good numbers for the temperature and emission measure, I think it's very important to do a combined fitting RESI and UV data.
Yeah, well, I agree, but these were old events. We didn't have any SDO data for these events. We do need newer events.
Yeah, maybe you could use a stereo or EIT, at least to, I mean, the peak of the flares is probably more like a 10 million, and you get 20 million. So when you have ghost data, maybe even ghost could help you.
Yeah, ghost data, yeah.
Hey, Spiro, one last quick one, please. What is your estimate of the plasma beta at the time when the pressure is maximum and the gas pressure is maximum?
I'm not sure. We don't have any magnetic pressure estimates.
You haven't looked at the field of the photosphere and tried to do some extrapolation just to get a sense of the beta near one?
We could, but I don't have any numbers for you, I'm sorry.